Hello and welcome back to Inside Total Film. I'm Jane Crowther, Editor-in-Chief of Total Film, and I've got with me today Deputy Editor Matt Matem.
Hello.
And Reviews Editor Matthew Leyland.
Hello.
Coming up this episode, we'll be talking to Christian Bale about playing another real-life character and fighting with Bourne. We'll be talking divorce with Scarlett Johansson. We'll be weighing up Marriage Story and Le Mans 66 and talking Oscar contenders as the race really begins. But first of all, drivers, start your engines for this.
So the great Carroll Shelby is going to build a car to beat Ferrari with a Ford.
Correct.
And how long did you tell them you needed? 200 or 300 years?
90 days.
So that is Le Mans 66, or as it's called in the States, Ford v Ferrari. Set it up for us, Matt. What is this really about?
Well, this is a film about the, as the UK title suggests, the Le Mans 66 race, which is the Le Mans race is still going. It's a 24-hour endurance race. And the film is basically about the Ford team led by Carroll Shelby, who's this kind of former driver turned car designer and kind of general all-round kind of wheeler dealer sort of manager.
He likes
type
to say
person.
He says wheels.
He's got a great, Matt Damon's got a great accent.
A great accent.
And yeah, and he's tasked with basically kind of putting together a car that can beat the Ferrari team, which is just the kind of reigning champs of this race, the Italians. Like, they're kind of seemingly unbeatable. So Ford, to kind of boost morale, they just really want a car that can win this race. And Carroll Shelby, played by Matt Damon, thinks that he needs Ken Miles, played by Christian Bale, to drive this car if they've got any chance of winning it.
And this is Bale doing, well, I think it's supposed to be a Birmingham accent.
It's a conspicuous accent, to say the least.
It's an accent. Okay. Our Hollywood correspondent Adam Tanswell caught up with Christian Bale and asked him what attracted him to playing a real-life character and playing Ken Miles.
He's a very iconic individual. He viewed himself mostly as a mechanic, but he was just a wonderful racer, but a real purist. And someone who, therefore, he would give everything to win every battle, but often lost the war. He was the definition of having zero strategy, you know, but being all heart completely. Phenomenally talented, but had gotten to an age, he was long in the tooth, and he kept on seeing these better-looking guys who were in his rearview mirror who would lose in races to him, but they would get all the good sponsors. And he's trying to raise a family, and finally, somebody, Shelby, says, this guy is one of the best racers in the world, and actually puts everything on the line for Miles, and hence you get suddenly, there he is. He should have won the Triple Crown, you know, Ford stole that from him.
Bale also told Adam about getting the blessing of the Miles family to play the role.
Peter was very generous to sit down with me and bring lots of family photographs and books about his dad, and just to sit and talk, because you never know what could be useful. So just hearing all sorts of anecdotes and you know, what Ken was like in the house, and then you know, the pain that Peter obviously went through in losing his dad so young. It was a really interesting family, and I'm going to watch the film with Peter and Peter's daughter, Ken's granddaughter, next week. Just the three of us are going to sit and watch it together.
And this is an actor who's played a number of real people and went from playing Dick Cheney to this. So Adam asked him what he liked about playing real life roles.
I do really find it liberating to play a real character. I can't remember the actual first time I did it, but what I realised in that first time is that it's really freeing, because you always want to be a team player, right? And the goal is always towards making the best film, not towards, you know, stealing a scene or being the, you know, best actor, whatever that means, in it. You want to make the best film. And when you meet real characters, you know, so many of them have just these great idiosyncratic personalities, things that don't necessarily make much sense, which we all understand that, you know, there's so many parts of our lives which don't seem to make sense, mannerisms. And in honesty, I often wouldn't have the courage to present it with a completely fictional character, these mannerisms, to a director without thinking, wait, this is my ego. I'm trying to steal a scene here. This is not right. Whereas with a living character, you go, like, meet him. Look, here he is. This is real, you know, or look at this video that I've done of him, or this recording I've made of him. So I actually find it to be very, 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 very liberating. Indeed.
So that's Bale talking about Ken Miles in the film. What do we think about his performance? Does he pull it off?
Yeah, I think he does, really. Obviously, there is that questionable accent that we mentioned that anyone who's been anywhere kind of near Birmingham may not recognise it. But I actually think his performance itself, the kind of intensity he brings, obviously is kind of Christian Bale. We know that he always kind of brings this kind of intensity. And he's lost a load of weight again, so he's got these really kind of sharp, angular cheekbones back. But there's sort of more of a warmth to this performance, I think, than some of his others. And he really, like, he's got such a sort of, to use a pun, one-track kind of mind about it all. And he's so kind of dedicated to this task that it's really easy to kind of get behind it. And that's kind of all he cares about. He doesn't care about the politics or anything like that. He's just obsessed with speed and kind of getting this perfect lap. And he's got Carol Shelby to kind of do all the people managing and work out all the logistics and stuff like that, and he's just there just to race.
It's well suited to Bale. I mean, he is sort of a bit Ken Miles himself. He's very singular in his vision of what he's trying to do with his performance. He's, you know, he doesn't like to compromise, as we know. So it's sort of, it's quite nice to see him playing this sort of character, but also with a sense of humour. He's not the Batman. He's sort of this quite jolly but very focused man.
Yeah, and him and Matt Damon work really well together in that sense. Like, in the same way, like, Matt Damon, you kind of can just easily believe is that person who just everyone gets on with and knows how to kind of work a room. And so on and off screen, they sort of work really well together. So that's definitely one of the kind of highlights of the film.
Do you think it'll be a big hit? Because, I mean, recent racing films like Rush, I mean, that got huge critical acclaim, but didn't do too well at the box office. So how well do you think this one will do?
It'll be interesting to see, because it has actually been tracking quite well, hasn't it, for a kind of decent, roughly 30 million opening weekend. Is that what the kind of predictors are saying at the moment?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
And yeah, so I think you would, like, this is the type of film that now people are thinking is going to be maybe the preserve of streaming services going forward, because this kind of adult drama, no superheroes, no big explosions, and kind of very much character led. And is there still a place for this in cinema? Hopefully. And so obviously I would like it to do well, because I hope they do still keep making these sort of high end dramas
pure class,
for grown-ups. Yeah. And I think as well, it really does warrant being seen on the big screen just for the racing sequences, really, because yeah, that's when the film really comes alive for me.
And also when Christian Bale and Matt Damon are having the most unmacho fight that they've ever done on screen. This is Bourne and Batman scuffling on a lawn with is there a loaf of bread involved or something? I can't even remember.
I think he's come back from his shopping, hasn't he? And they kind of end up, coming to blows. But it's a really kind of nice scene, because it's hilarious. And also it kind of does say a lot about the characters as well.
Adam actually asked Christian Bale about that scene, and here's what he had to say about filming it.
Two guys who are mad as hell at each other and really don't want to hurt each other at all, you know, and don't want to get hurt either, you know. So it's a great sort of wimpy, confused, stupid, juvenile fight between two grown men who should know a lot better, but kind of love this relationship they have. And it's also shows that great bond that that some people manage to find in their lives, which is highly enviable, where, you know, they can have these fights, but know that underneath they really bloody love each other throughout. And they would never say that ever to each other. But these two can go through hell together and come out knowing that they're thick as thieves.
So that's Christian on that fight scene. But this is, you know, very much a buddy film. But will it also give petrol heads their fix? I mean, I thought the racing scenes were amazing in this.
Yeah, I'm someone who's not naturally a motor racing fan. I'm not a big sports guy, but it's kind of like Rocky in the sense that you don't need to like boxing to really kind of invest in Rocky. I think it's the same for this. And I think it does actually, because the scenes are so kind of visceral and you really feel like you're in the kind of cabin with Ken Miles as he's kind of racing around. It does give you a new appreciation of kind of what goes into racing a car like this.
And how low tech it was in 1966. Yeah. I mean, they do a fuel stop and it takes 5 minutes whilst they unscrew the wheels and sort of put new tires on and fill it up very slowly with a pump. When you think how quickly they do it now, it's and you know, they're racing around. At one point he's racing around a lap and his door doesn't shut and he's trying to shut his door as he's going. It's sort of very sort of lo-fi. So the feat of the speeds they're going and the records they were breaking is even more impressive, really, when you think that they're rattling around in this tin can and it's not as finessed as now.
Oh, yeah. And it does also, I think, it really gives you a sense of how long they're racing for, because I had no idea before I saw the film or before I learned about the film that this was a 24-hour race and that they're actually kind of racing over 24 hours. And yeah, just the kind of endurance involved in that and how a car lasts that long when it's being kind of
pushed to the limit like that. And a man who's basically just having cups of tea and a biscuit in between. And also a lot of this was done for real, because you spoke to Christian Bale and Matt Damon and the director about this, and they were actually in those cars racing at top speeds.
Yeah, they did. They used a lot of real kind of vintage cars, and they actually, because they couldn't film on the Le Mans track as it is now, because it's so different to what it was back in 1966. So they did it across about six different tracks, where kind of they chose sections that related to what it would have been like back then and kind of stitched them all together. But it's very seamless when you see the film. You would have no idea that it was all kind of cut and shut together like that.
And they do look like they're sort of experiencing the G-force on their bodies, and they're actually in there, actually turning the wheel and doing the driving. There's no cheating involved.
No.
So all of that makes it quite emotionally satisfying and dramatic, even though you might know the outcome of the actual historical race. Here's Bale's take on what makes the film work for him.
Well, it's great to be able to get in those cars and to be able to meet the some of the best drivers in the world and race around tracks with them and have them teach me some of those skills. But that isn't what the heart of the film is about, because you have to look at the human element of it in order to invest in the racing side of it. And there's just this wonderful human story about friendship and integrity and what that means and betrayal, etc. And in that regard, it's very sort of Shakespearean, this. And so I think people will be really pleasantly surprised that, much like that documentary Senna, I found a lot of people who were not Formula One fans really were excited by it and understood it. I think Jim Mangold's achieved the same thing here with Ford v Ferrari.
So we can say this is a classy film that's, you know, I think it would be appealing to everyone from, you know, people who knew nothing to people who really loved their cars. You know, you could take your parents to this and they're going to have a good time, or you can just enjoy it as a really classy Saturday night popcorn movie.
It's a very easy film to watch, and it is very much, I'd say, a dad's film as well. Just, I think a lot of dads will get a kick out of it. But for me, it kind of, I gave it 3 stars when I reviewed it, because I think ultimately, whilst the race scenes are amazing, it's never quite as good when they're not on the track. And for a film that ultimately is on quite a predictable path, it's a bit too long. I think at 2.5 hours, it could have trimmed about half an hour, I think, comfortably off that.
Noah Jupe is the little boy in it who plays his son, Ken Miles' son. He's really excellent and has some lovely sort of father-son scenes. But, you know, we have to say that the wife is very shortchanged, and she literally stands around listening to the radio or anxiously waiting by doors. And it's a very thankless role. So it hasn't really reinvented the wheel, shall we say, with that.
Ba-dum.
So if we sold that to you, Matthew, are you going to go and see it?
Yeah, I think so. I'll take my dad.
Oh, lovely. And that is out on Friday the 15th, so you can take yours. And now moving on from one warring duo to another.
It's not as simple as not being in love anymore.
Eventually, it'll be the two of you having to figure this out. Together.
If we start from a place of reasonable and they start from a place of crazy, when we settle, we'll be somewhere between reasonable and crazy.
That's Marriage Story, starring Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver as a couple going through a bruising divorce. Matthew and Matt, give us a little log line on this one.
So this is written and directed by Noah Baumbach, who previously made a divorce film called The Squid and the Whale, but where that was very much from the perspective of the children, this is very much about the couple involved. So it's Adam Driver as Charlie, Scarlett Johansson as Nicole, and they're breaking up and they're going through a very long and increasingly bitter custody battle.
And expensive.
And expensive, yeah. Yeah, and they get two very high-profile kind of barnstorming lawyers involved, played by Laura Dern and Ray Liotta. it's not quite as grim as it sounds. There are actually quite a few laughs in it. It's got quite a sort of screwball tone at times, because you've got Julie Haggerty from Instant Family and Airplane. She's kind of the wacky mother-in-law.
Daffy mummy, yeah.
Yeah, she gets involved. But overall, I mean, it is a very sort of emotionally bruising marathon of a film.
Adam, our Hollywood correspondent, talked to Scarlett Johansson about the conversations she and Noah Baumbach had in creation of this film. Here's what she had to say about that.
So when I was shooting Infinity War and Endgame, I was talking to Noah about this script because he was writing it during that time. And, you know, we talked about all kinds of stuff. We talked about our parents. We talked about, you know, of course, our relationships. We talked about how it was to be a single parent. You know, we talked about, you know, our childhood and all kinds of stuff, you know, that is infused into this film, because the story is not just about divorce. Of course, it is, but it's much more about, it's more about the love that remains between these two characters.
And they also discussed why audiences are having such a visceral reaction to this movie. Why does it resonate so much?
I think this film, Noah doesn't judge any of these characters. You know, he really lets it's interesting because while all the characters are so wildly different, I mean, Alan Alda's character to the Ray Liotta character, Laura's character, and Adam and I, we all have our story, right? And we're all, like, everyone's got their story. Mm-hmm. And I think when you see the way that Noah respectfully approaches all of these stories, whether you kind of love or hate these people in different ways, it resonates with the audience because there's no right or wrong in this film. It's able to just be, you know, which is so refreshing, I think, especially when, like, you see a lot of everybody always asks me whenever I make a movie, you know, what do you want the audience to take away, or like, mm-hmm. what's the moral of this story? And I'm like, why does every story have to have a moral? Sometimes it's just, you just want to see some reflection of yourself up there, and then let it kind of sit, and then it means different things to different people, you know.
This film certainly resonated with me. Did it with you too?
It did. I really, really enjoyed this film. It didn't quite, like, never quite took me to the point of tears, actually, which sort of surprised me almost, because I went in fully ready for that. But I really liked it and found it, I did find it very moving, especially during some of their sort of tougher confrontations.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's elements of anybody's sort of various relationships in this at different points. There's the love section. You do get to see what makes them fall in love and the sort of idiosyncrasies of that and the weird things that she does. Like, she buys him a trumpet for his birthday and he loves that about her. But then you see the sort of slow fallout of that love and devotion and how that turns to sort of just bitterness and hate when you actually end up scrabbling around in a court trying to decide who owns what and who sort of lives where and who looks after the kid, and how that just sort of destroys any of that residual love that they had at the beginning, and how you fight that. I think loads of people can identify with various aspects of that, whether they've been through divorce or are a child of divorce or just broken up badly with somebody. And that sort of idea of how do you navigate this is really compelling. There's some great performances in this, aren't there? It's not just the two that are really good.
There's great performances all around. But for me, Adam Driver was actually the standout. They kind of get equal screen time, really, Nicole and Charlie. But if anything, perhaps the film does slightly lean more towards his side of the story, and he has a couple of kind of particularly spectacular moments, I'd say. Like, there's one moment where it sounds kind of ridiculous when you just say it like this, but he's in a bar with friends and he starts singing this Stephen Sondheim song. And I actually wasn't even familiar with the song before I saw the film, but I just couldn't get it out of my head afterwards. Yeah. I had to just listening to it on repeat.
And he's
afterwards.
Not a particularly great singer.
No.
It's just very, very emotional.
Yeah, and like, they somehow found this song that just sort of perfectly fits what he's kind of going through. And like that really, of all the scenes, that one probably stuck with me the most, actually. So I thought he was really a kind of a standout.
I mean, he's been having a great year, a great couple of years.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what he's, you know, we've got Rise of Skywalker coming out.
Yeah,
he's got the report.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just
really
incredible.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we're going to talk about Oscar nominations, but he seems pretty much nailed on to get a nomination for this role.
Yeah,
I mean,
he should.
His style just keeps on rising. He's incredibly versatile.
Yeah. I love Laura Dern. Laura Dern plays Scarlett Johansson's divorce lawyer, and she's this sort of very smart woman. She's a little bit like her character in Big Little Lies. Mm. There's sort of echoes of that.
Yeah.
But also just so ruthless, but in a sort of sugar-coated fashion.
Yeah.
So there's just this absolute quality going on in this film with everything, the script, the performances, everything about it just feels like a three-course meal.
Mm. I really liked Alan Alda as well. I mean, he doesn't have a particularly big part, but he kind of captures the whole kind of the sort of dehumanizing process that they go through and the mundanity of it and just the agony of it.
Yeah.
He's very good.
And Ray Liotta's actually terrifying in it as well, because he kind of plays the sort of counterpart to Laura Dern's character, because he's the sort of tough divorce lawyer on Adam Driver's side. And he just looks like he could explode any minute. And he hasn't lost any of that kind of capacity for being terrifying that he's kind of had over the years.
So you've got this second tier of him going up against Laura Dern. So if one kind of bitter fight isn't enough for you, you've got another one in them as well.
Yeah, duking it out in court.
Yeah.
But also, as we mentioned earlier, this is a very funny film in places as well. I mean, there's a sort of, this horrifically, it's terribly sad, but also funny, where Adam Driver tries to take his little boy trick-or-treating, it's on his time and he's gonna goddamn take him round. Yeah. And they go around all these houses in these really feeble outfits and nobody's in. And it's horribly funny. There are some funny lines in it as well.
Yeah, it's very funny. I think because Adam Driver's character, Charlie, he's this quite pretentious theatre director. So there's sort of laughs mined from that. And there's this really, really great sequence at the beginning of the film where there's this list of qualities they've written about each other, like the reasons why they fell in love with each other in the first place. And you kind of get to see those, they kind of illustrate them all with little mini clips, and it's like a kind of 20-minute montage or something. And I just thought that was just such a great scene, just kind of establishing them and their relationships. And that was just pretty much funny throughout.
And the minutiae of the things that irritate you or you love about someone, like not shutting cupboard doors or just eating everything at speed.
Not turning the lights off.
Yeah. It's so relatable. And that's out this week in cinemas and hits Netflix on the 6th of December. So we can't recommend that enough. Do have a look at it. Marriage Story does look like it'll be Oscar contenders. So let's have a look at the runners and riders also looking to get gold.
I love gold!
So we're definitely in awards corridor now. They're starting to rev up. They're all starting to pick their dresses, thinking about what they're going to wear, who's going to go. What do you think are the front runners for our best film this year?
It feels like quite an open race this year. It doesn't feel like there's any sort of nailed on one that's going to go all the way, which I guess is quite a good thing.
I mean, there's stuff that's been in conversation for a while, like Joker, an Irishman we always sort of thought about. But then we've also got the issue with Irishman of whether Netflix will be allowed to be winning a big award.
Well, yeah, that'd be a big deal, wouldn't it, if that does go all the way.
And let's think about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yeah. That's obviously been around, but that has a good chance of going all the way.
Tarantino is always popular with the Academy. A lot of his films have won Oscars, so that seems guaranteed to get a hatful of nominations.
And basically any film that has kind of good box office always helps. And Once Upon a Time in Hollywood has been one of the biggest hits of Tarantino's career. And same for Joker, because that's now pushing a billion at the box office.
Yeah,
it's going to crack that within a matter of days. That's surely going to keep it right at the forefront of the conversation. And obviously, we'll talk about Joaquin as an actor contender, but I think the film has got a good kind of picture shout now that it's kind of done so well and has stayed around in all of our consciousnesses for so long.
Yeah.
Do we think Marriage Story has a chance, or is that a sort of a threat, but not necessarily a major threat?
Well, again, it's a Netflix film, but I think it will get a few nominations.
I think it has a good chance, because it recalls Kramer versus Kramer, which at the kind of 1980 awards did a big sweep of kind of five very big awards. And it very much recalls that in the sort of divorce story, kid involved.
And also, let's nice not forget symmetry, the people it? Who are voting for this are probably possibly many third, time divorced marriage. Themselves, probably can see a lot more in it than everyone else.
And the fact it's kind of set within the industry as well is surely going to appeal. Yeah. Like, these are kind of actors and directors.
Yes, and they can understand the push-pull on a marriage. What about Jojo Rabbit? There was discussion that this might be something that could get into the Best Picture category, but then it had that love-hate reaction at TIFF. Does it have enough love to take it through?
I don't know. It feels like one that could fall by the wayside, maybe. One that's perhaps peaked a bit early. And it's got the kind of controversial imagery with it as well.
But it did win the Audience Award at Toronto, which traditionally has indicated it's been the bellwether for whether you go on to win the Best Picture. I mean, Green Book did that.
Green Book also similarly was kind of mixed, to say the least, with critics, but that didn't obviously harm it with the Academy. And I could see that being the case with Jojo Rabbit as well, just because critics haven't all fawned over it. I think it could still be quite a popular hit that could potentially go all the way.
There's some new films coming out sort of right in this sort of window that are possible contenders. I would say Bombshell is one, possibly Just Mercy as well.
They've both got big kind of talking point subject matters, haven't they?
Yeah, Bombshell is the sort of story of Roger Ailes' downfall, and Just Mercy is about a young black lawyer who helps men on death row fight their convictions. The other thing as well that we shouldn't really discount is A Beautiful Day in the Neighbourhood, which, although is the story of Mr. Rogers, this TV personality that we're not really familiar with in the UK, is a huge sort of nostalgic hit for Americans. That could possibly be in the running.
You've seen it. It's a very emotional film, isn't it?
I mean, it's so cosy. It's like a knitted sweater in cinematic form. It's just the sort of feel-good stuff that the Academy likes. And also, I would say, don't discount Ad Astra. That had great reviews, although not great box office.
No, that could count against it. It might be a little bit forgotten. Yeah. But I think Brad Pitt's probably on for quite a good year with that and with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Well, let's move on to that and think about Best Actor. Is Brad going to be a contender for Ad Astra, or is he going to cancel himself out with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
He could cancel himself out, yeah, or it could just lean towards Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for supporting actor. I wouldn't be surprised to see that.
Yeah, we'll see how he plays that. He'll probably have a strategist that's deciding right now whether he goes actor or supporting actor. Mm. But other people in the acting categories, what do we think? Obviously, Joaquin Phoenix has long been discussed as a contender.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be a huge upset if he doesn't get a nomination.
Would he actually win it?
Well, I mean, Heath Ledger won for Joker before, so there is precedent there for him to win. I mean, that would be a big deal for a comic book. I mean, it's still essentially a comic book movie, so for that to win a huge award.
Yeah, but there has been a lot of controversy about so does that put the voters off?
Yeah, it can do, yeah. I mean, it's his time as well. I mean, he's been nominated several times before, so
it is an astonishing performance. But then we've also got people like Robert De Niro for The Irishman, you know, doing this 3-hour marathon performance across many decades.
I wonder with The Irishman if there'll be any aspect of the special effects, kind of the de-aging, that could put people off in terms of performance. Maybe it
there is a,
does it kind of distance you when he's got this
sort
kind
of once you get used
de-aging
to it, you forget about it. So I don't know that would be off-putting. There's also
it feels like there's just not as much talk about De Niro as there is about Joaquin at the moment,
or Adam Driver, as you mentioned earlier, for Marriage Story.
Yeah.
Or Leonardo, again, back in the race for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Adam Sandler's been discussed as a possible sort of rogue choice for Uncut Gems. Antonio Banderas for Pain and Glory. Possibly Eddie Murphy for Dolomite Is My Name. That's been sort of getting some buzz. And Robert Pattinson for The Lighthouse. But again, that's a weird one, because do they put him as Best Actor or Willem Dafoe? Because it's very even-handed. That will be for the strategist to decide as well. Do you think any of those have a chance of getting up into that final five?
I can see Banderas, I think, because he's kind of made quite a nice comeback, and Almodovar films are always quite popular with the Academy.
And he is excellent in
it. Yeah, he's fantastic in it, yeah. It's that kind of autumn years performance that they do like.
I think some of those other films, though, such as Adam Sandler and Robert Pattinson, are obviously great in Uncut Gems and The Lighthouse, but they're such tough films, and they're so kind of so unique. You know, they're just not mainstream films at all, really. They're just not kind of easy watches. So I don't know how many Academy members will actually sit down and enjoy those films enough to kind of,
are they going
get
to
the
watch
full benefit of those performances?
Robert Pattinson beating a seagull to death in a
black and white movie.
Black and white, different ratioed film, when they could just be going, oh, I heard that Joaquin was good in The Joker. Yeah, we'll see. Okay, well, that's us wrapping up on front runners of Best Film and Best Actor contenders. Next podcast, we'll have a look at who's in the running for Best Actress and Best Director. So time will tell if we got those right, but for now, let's sign off with another listener question, this time from Charlie Greenwood, and he asks, what's the best set visit you've ever been on, Matthew?
I went on The Hobbit in 2011, went to Wellington in New Zealand, 25-hour flight, both ways, and then just there for two nights. Yeah, absolutely worth it. Yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, the hospitality was amazing. We saw loads of stuff being shot. Did a tour of locations where Lord of the Rings was filmed.
Was it like being on like sort of a Universal backlot tour?
It was
as
a
much as
bit.
You were like in the actual world of Hobbits.
There were. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of green screen, but there's certainly a lot of practical sets as well. Mm. A lot of greenery as well as green screen everywhere, and it was quite amazing seeing all the elves, doubles, all these really like 7 foot tall people queuing up at the craft services for their bolognese. That was quite a treat.
Was it dwarves or elves? Sorry.
It was both. It was dwarves and elves. Yeah.
They all like spaghetti
bolognese.
All
of Middle-earth was there, yeah.
Okay, that's amazing. What about you, Matt?
I probably would have to say Avengers Infinity War, just because films don't really come much bigger in terms of scale, and just being on that kind of soundstage and there being so many recognisable superheroes in costume. Robert Downey Jr., Chris Hemsworth, Chris Evans, Tom Holland, just pretty much any Avenger you could name was there. So that kind of, yeah, in terms of thrills of
and the secrecy
life,
of it. I remember when you went on that, you weren't allowed to say.
You were almost a bit scared even going, because you think, God, am I accidentally going to slip something out before I'm supposed to? But your phone, you had to, like, obviously you have to have your phone off, but you put a little sort of sticker over the camera of your phone, like, just to make double sure that you're not going to be taking any sort of sneaky snaps while you're there.
Sounds cool.
And what about you, Jane? What's your best set visit ever?
I've done a couple of Bonds, and Skyfall was a really good one, because it was after Quantum of Solace, where everyone was like, ugh, Bond. And coming back to Skyfall was, you know, this improvement, and you could tell that on the set. It was just a whole other kettle of fish. And I went on set in Istanbul and at Pinewood, but also I did the Skyfall Lodge burning down, and I was the only press on set for that. Unfortunately, they realised that I couldn't ever write about it because it was a plot spoiler, but it was amazing. And I also really enjoyed being on Thor the Dark World for Thanksgiving, because they did a great big Thanksgiving dinner for all the cast and crew. So everyone was sitting around having turkey dressed as Thor, and all of the sort of various elves, the dark elves and everything, were sitting around eating their turkey with little American flags. And it was quite cool. So I enjoyed that.
As we always say, the catering is one of the best things.
I think we've discussed this. Mm. There's a theme here. If you listen to this podcast, we do enjoy our catering on a film set. So yeah, a full American Thanksgiving dinner was a cracker. If you have a question you'd like us to answer, just tweet us. I'm at @totalfilm_Jane, and you are Matt?
At Matt Matum.
And you are Matthew?
At @totalfilm_MattL.
So you can hassle us and tell us all the things you want to know, and we'll try to answer them. That's all we've got time for, but don't forget, the Star Wars issue is out this Friday. Ah! In-depth chats with everyone about The Rise of Skywalker, so do hurry to the newsagents. And if you'd like to get 10% off a Total Film subscription, you can with the code INSIDETF at checkout at www.myfavouritemagazines.co.uk. And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram to find out what we're up to as well. Just remain to say thank you to Matt.
Cheers.
And to Matthew.
Ta.
And also to Christian Bale and Scarlett Johansson. And we'll see you next time.